The reason why I'm fearful of public speaking is because I'm fearful of making a mistake. It's a fear of judgment and embarrassment. So now that individual can be aware of it. But one thing I used to think is, oh, awareness creates change. It's not true at all. Right. Awareness doesn't create change. Awareness just brings you to more awareness to what's actually the problem. Mm-hmm. And for many people, that can be problematic because what they do, I know what it is, but then their mind keeps spinning on this hamster wheel of it's this. And then their unconscious mind is like, this is good. Because now they will never figure out how to get rid of this.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Welcome to the Most High Show, made by and for people in recovery. It's a show about recovery, spirituality, and being human. Our mission is to provide impactful, community-driven media that informs, empowers, and inspires positive change. Real people, real stories, real life. This is the Most High Show. Our guest today, well, let's first say our host is Sarah, and I'm Christian.
Hi, guys.
Jason is on the ones and twos. I think Josie's doing quality control. There's a group of wild animals out there.
Very wild animals.
They're all hopped up on Mountain Dew. And our guest today, how do we say Duran?
Duran Singh.
Singh. Duran Singh. Oh, you could have been a rapper or a singer or.
I could be anything.
Yeah, you can. So he is a father of two, a golden doodle owner. I like that. The founder of Truthful Soul Hypnosis. He has a background in health and fitness, life coaching, NLP, RTT therapy, we'll figure out what those stand for, and hypnosis. So the theme for tonight is accessing the subconscious for real transformation. So please welcome Duran to the Most High Show.
I just know teachers loved your name during roll call that first day of school.
It was Darren. I was like already prepared to correct him.
You did?
Often. Yeah.
And so you always were quick to correct him.
Yeah, it was just like, I just got used to them just butchering my name. That started changing when I got to college.
Okay, what'd you change it to?
Oh, no, my name was the same, but they just knew how to pronounce it properly.
In college?
Yeah.
Higher education, more sophistication.
That was my assumption too.
Yeah.
They understand phonetics.
Exactly.
So share us, you have an interesting story about going from personal training into hypnosis.
Yeah.
Which on the surface don't seem like they're related at all. Mm-hmm. So just explain to us that kind of journey of you got into personal training and then how do you make the transition into hypnosis?
Yeah, so... as a personal trainer, I was passionate about it. So for me, people came to me for advice about training. So for me at that time, I was like, I can make a business out of this. So I ended up doing that, was really successful with that, owned two gyms. I was making close to $500,000 a year, doing really well for myself, traveling. I knew at the time I didn't want to do that for the rest of my life. So even as I got the ability to have the gym just mature and run on its own, I was thinking about speaking, traveling the world. I was into Tony Robbins, so I wanted to just speak to people, do a lot of motivational stuff. So during that time, I started speaking to high schools just because I wanted them to just be motivated to do whatever they desire to do since mm-hmm. I was doing it myself. I started to have some issues with child custody stuff. And at the time, I thought that was just making everything worse for me. So I started having a lot of anger issues. Because of that, I started not being able to make decisions properly. So business started to decline from there. And during that time, I knew I was like, I just don't want to do this anymore. I was depressed and anxious. And I just made the decision to just sell my business. And this decision, when I say overnight decision, it was an overnight decision. It was, I'm going to get rid of the business. So I ended up doing that. And during that time, I was like, all right, I got to find what's next for me. So I was like on this search, let's say. And during that time, like closer to the end of me selling my businesses, I was into yoga. So I started doing yoga and enjoyed that, started teaching, opened up a small little practice. But at the same time, I was like, I just don't really want to continue doing this. From there, I started going into coaching, enjoyed that. However, I was coming across people where some would get results, some would not get results. And even during that time, I realized I was still dealing with some depression and a lot of anxiety. And it wasn't until I came across hypnotherapy, where I was like, this actually really, really works. And just from there, I just dove deeper into it with reaching out to more mentors. And I remember I had a therapist and a coach at one point in my life tell me, once you're depressed, you're always depressed. And I never believed that. For me, I was like, I know there's, I wasn't born to be depressed my entire life.
Sounds freaking horrible.
Yeah. So,
dude. Wait, like, but what does that, what does that mean though? Like you will never not be depressed, or is like they're viewing it as like a clinical thing? And this is something you're always going to have to deal
with.
Yeah.
So for me, and I think that's a question for them to be here to kind of explain. But for me, in my mind, it was them saying like, the moment you have depression, like you're always going to be depressed for your entire life. Like there's no cure for it. That's how I perceived it in my head.
Okay.
So for me, I was like, you know, there's, I can't agree to that.
Yeah.
So when I came across hypnosis, it's been ultimately the only thing that has helped me with depression and anxiety.
So you found a therapist, a hypnotherapist for yourself?
Yes.
Okay. So you experienced it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us about that. You go in. And are you apprehensive? Or are you just at the point of like, I'm just down for something to work? Or what was your headspace at when you first go into that?
I was excited about it because up to that point, I probably spent around like $70,000 just trying to find a healing modality. So I was excited about it. And it's one of those things where I'm just like, I don't know what happened. But as time went on, I realized something shifted. And that's what made the big change for me.
Wow. You say you don't know what happened.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't know what happened either because we're very ignorant to hypnosis while we're having you on, right? Like, and all of the stigma that associated with it, right? Which I'm sure you're well aware of. So what did happen though?
What happened, like with my background now, what happened is there was information given to my unconscious, subconscious mind. I use them interchangeably.
Okay.
To reprogram it in a way that's designed to get me towards the desire outcome that I want.
Okay.
So the reason why it's very important not to be so concerned with what happened is because when you're focused on what happened, the analytical mind kicks back in. Mm. The analytical mind is actually what is perpetuating the problem. Because to your unconscious mind, there is no problem. And
would the analytical mind be like what some of us might call the ego?
Yeah, you could call it the ego, conscious mind. So ultimately, I look at it, there's two parts of mind. You have your conscious mind, you have your unconscious mind.
Okay.
The conscious mind is the thinking mind. Conscious mind is what I'm going to have for dinner tonight, right? Unconscious mind is, I don't know why, but I'm craving pizza. I don't know why, right? So it's that you releasing the why behind it.
Okay.
And it really comes down to trusting your unconscious mind knows what's best for you. Because even though we can call something a problem, and a good example I give people is someone, let's say they have a fear of public speaking. They're like, Daron, I'm really fearful of public speaking. I want to speak. And what they don't realize at the time is their unconscious mind is creating that fear for them. And for most people, rationally, it's like, that's terrible. Why would they do that to themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Well, think about what can happen. They get up on stage. And now they make a mistake. They mess up. They say a word improperly. And because of that, now people are making fun of him. So their unconscious mind is like, hey, we're creating this fear because this fear can prevent you from experiencing something worse. Embarrassment, judgment, shame.
Okay.
So it's ultimately understanding where the emotional scale is and noticing that our subconscious mind, unconscious mind's number one priority is to keep us safe.
Yeah.
So is the unconscious mind like it, like when you have to dig deep to figure out, like, because you're like, oh, I have this fear of public speaking. And then it's looking at, okay, but why? And then that's when you listed like the, okay, well, what if you make a mistake? What if you mispronounce a word and now people are making fun of you? And so it's like that underlying fear. Is that like, even though you can access that with your conscious mind, is that your unconscious mind? If that makes sense.
The fear, all of our emotions are in our unconscious mind.
Okay.
So asking the questions like that is going to be a conscious thought. Okay. So it's you trying to figure, it's like, for example, an individual like that, they can be aware, oh, the reason why I'm fearful of public speaking is because I'm fearful of making a mistake. It's a fear of judgment and embarrassment. So now that individual can be aware of it. Mm-hmm. But one thing I used to think is, oh, awareness creates change. It's not true at all.
Right.
Awareness doesn't create change. Awareness just brings you to more awareness to what's actually the problem. Mm-hmm. And for many people, that can be problematic because what they do, I know what it is, but then their mind keeps spinning on this hamster wheel of it's this, it's this, it's this, it's this. And then their unconscious mind is like, this is good. Because now they will never figure out how to get rid of this because having that problem keeps them ultimately safe. And another example that just came up for me right now, unconsciously, is your mind's number one priority is keep you safe, right? Yeah. So I always use this example and people always laugh, like, what would you rather have? One leg cut off or two legs? People are like, oh, neither. Well, if you got to pick one, one or two legs? Oh, one. Yeah.
Right.
Both suck.
Yeah.
But your unconscious mind is picking and choosing which is the lesser of two evils per se.
Okay. So you said it here. Awareness isn't enough. Healing happens at the subconscious level.
Yes.
To me, what comes up is, like in recovery language, it's what we would call like a psychic change.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe spiritual. Would you kind of like equate those in the same realm or worlds, or you know, because language, like people, you know, the thinking mind likes to put labels on shit, right?
Go, yes,
this is that and this is that. Mm-hmm. And when I'm hearing you explain this to me, it's like the words I would use would be a psychic change or spirit or spiritual. Mm-hmm. Those are the words that I would use.
And that's important to know because your model of the world is that.
Right.
So, and one thing I'll preface too is I do conversational hypnosis. So not traditional hypnotherapy. And I'll go into that later on. But in conversational hypnosis.
We need to switch seats.
Why?
Because he's doing conversational hypnosis.
Oh, not right now.
Well, how do you know you're not unconsciously?
I'm hypnotizing.
Well, let me say this. We're all doing it to one another to some extent. I will say that.
Yeah, yeah.
But now, and more importantly, this is probably one of those like kickers, is every single person is hypnotizing themselves every single day. Now, it's in which direction?
Wait, but like when you gaslight yourself, is that hypnotizing yourself?
What do you think?
I'm going to say yes.
And that is.
Yeah, I think like I maybe like know what you're talking about because like especially like in the show or, you know, there's a moment when we might have crossed that threshold where all of a sudden it's just us talking.
Mm-hmm.
All the production, the lights and the camera and everything. And then we're like, I say like we're surfing the cosmos. Like it's what it feels like. So maybe we're like in like your language to say we're in this subconscious space now because we're communicating at a I don't know, deeper is the word. I don't know.
Yeah. So like right now this is kind of like just we're throwing terms out there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If I was working with a client.
Yeah.
Your terms are what I'm going to give you. So like one of the one like the father of modern hypnosis is Milton H. Erickson.
Okay.
He was a psychologist and he's the one that pretty much like created conversational hypnosis.
Okay.
He started off doing traditional hypnosis where he would have a client, He'd get them nice and relaxed, and then he would give them direct suggestions. So for about 20% of the population, it works. Those analytical people, the 80%, not so much. Because what was happening is he was working with these clients, and he would get them nice and relaxed. And it could be something like, all right, Christian, just go ahead and close your eyes and just imagine a nice, beautiful staircase to go down. And then that individual's like, okay, well, what color should the staircase be? How many steps? So they're analyzing already.
That would be you.
Yeah.
No, I can visualize. I visualize pretty easily.
Yeah.
Well, I saw the staircase.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did not.
You did not.
No.
Yeah, so that's you.
Yeah. Sorry, I was projecting.
Yeah. So you have individuals where they're going to be so caught up in all of the like the details of it.
Yeah.
So when you give them a direct suggestion, it's like, all right, you're happy and you're healthy. Their minds are rejecting it because they never got into that state to where they can be open to suggestions. Mm-hmm. So he started doing conversational, which was very permissive. It'd be something more like, hey, you know, you could drink another, you know, sip of your water because it probably tastes good, right? Mm-hmm. And he would realize that they would do it now so easily. And as that would start to happen,
I'm fighting the urge.
And you are, right? Yeah. And that's interesting that you're fighting the urge.
My mouth is watering.
One thing you notice is what you said earlier is, oh, are you doing it to me right now? But what you're realizing right now is, that's right.
So is that like when people are like, okay, don't think of an elephant. And then the only thing you think of is an elephant. Similar or like way off base?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So if someone says, don't think of an elephant, that individual is going to think of an elephant.
Mm-hmm.
It's really how you use your words. So like with conversational, it's doing it in a way to get their mind so caught up in the current task that you gave them to do that their unconscious mind opens up. So your conscious mind, people like to multitask. Your conscious mind can only take on like 7 bits of information at a time. And there it is. Boom. See?
No, it was going to happen anyway. Boom. Your suggestion.
Gotcha.
Didn't. That's the real question.
Of course.
Was I already going to drink it, or was it because of the suggestion?
Yeah. We'll let the viewers decide on that.
You
so, comment below.
Comment below.
Was he going to drink it anyway?
Was he going to drink anyway?
Yes, that's a great. You need to sit with Reeves. Remember Reeves, who comes in and does the mindful stuff? Because there's like a very similar. Anyway, sorry. Mm-hmm. Let's do this. Let's move forward to the common misconceptions.
Okay.
Right? And we have here like the Hollywood stage acts versus clinical work. I think that's a really important distinction to make for people who are looking, who have, tried all these, I don't want to say modern or kind of like conventional methods of therapies and things and have always kind of wrote off hypnosis because of this. Because of the misconceptions.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Hypnosis has been around for thousands and thousands of years. People probably think it's becoming more modernized now. It goes back to Egyptian times where they had what was called dream temples, where people would go into these temples and they would be surrounded by all these snakes, and then they would lay there and they'd be hypnotized for whatever purposes that they had going on. They used it
lay around snakes.
Pardon?
They would lay around snakes.
You would love that.
Yeah.
So there's even people that talk about the medical staff. They have the snake that wraps around the staff right there.
Mm-hmm.
They've used it for soldiers as a way to numb them from pain. What happened, this is like a history of it, is Sigmund Freud came around and started introducing a psychotherapy model. So you have people that were being healed from whatever issue. It was like a one and done type of thing. However, it was one of those things, well, it's not that much money to help someone once, but what if we just keep them coming back week after week after week after week?
Okay.
So that started to push.
So not a fan of Freud. Away. You're not a fan of Freud.
I'm not. The reason why is because his outlook on the unconscious mind was this a terrible, dark, nightmarish place.
Ah. Mm.
And he made it to where people, and that demonized hypnosis, where people are like, oh, I don't want to go in the unconscious mind. So you have some people like, I don't want you messing with my mind. It's like, what do you mean?
Right.
So he created that image for people, which scared a lot of people away from it.
Yeah. Mm.
So you have that happened, I'm not sure, hundreds of years, so on and so forth. So you have a lot of misconceptions that takes place in movies where they make it seem like it's mind control. Someone's going to take control of my mind. In hypnosis, the only mind control that happens is the client or patient having, it's actually giving them control back of their mind. Mm. It's not thinking, them thinking, oh, this person is making me do this. That thing is making me do that. It's, oh, I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. And this goes back to like the self-hypnosis things. So yeah. It's giving them control back of their, over themselves.
Cause like, I think of like, you know, the fair and the guys up there and he's making people cluck like a chicken.
Oh yeah. Stage. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
it. Like yeah, the pendulum and the spiral.
Yeah. So, yeah. So yeah. Stage hypnosis and the pendulum thing. The reason why people talk about the pendulum is because, there was an individual, what happened when he learned hypnosis, like centuries ago, he had a pocket watch and he would lift it up. And anyone can go into hypnosis. He lifted up above their eye line. Anytime your eyes get above and look up above your eye line, you get into an altered state just like that. Mm. And it's what happens when you go to sleep. Before you go to sleep, what happens?
Yeah,
your eyes start to lift up. So anyone can go into hypnosis just from doing that. So people
you're
think
really good at breaking this down. Yeah. This is fucking great.
Yeah. And the reason why I'm so good at it is because one of my goals is to help demystify all the crap that people know about it.
Yeah.
Because once again, it's not the clock, not the watch. It's just having your eyes lift up and that gets you into that state just like that. Mm. But as far as stage hypnosis, anyone that goes on stage is entertainment. So a hypnotist is going to probably search the crowd and is going to ask, hey, you want to come up on stage? Of course, once they give consent, they know it's entertainment. They're not going to go up on stage and not entertain, right?
Oh.
So they're already...
Subconsciously agreeing.
They're already suggestible, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things also where if they cluck like a chicken, guess what they can do? I was hypnotized.
Yeah.
So they can always push it off on, I was hypnotized. Mm. But really, they're allowing themselves to do it. Yeah. Because I can't help anyone do anything that they don't want to do. So... if someone's like, I really don't want to stop smoking, but my wife wants me to smoke. Well, so you don't want to stop smoking? No, my wife wants me to stop. Well, then it's not a smoking problem. It's why is this an issue for her? Mm. And why is that bothering you? So it turns into a different issue.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's good. By the way, we're going to do a live
Snake charming.
Hypnosis. Intern number 5, Bailey, has agreed.
Still alive.
Has agreed to be hypnosis and has a desired result. So that's coming up.
Just want to
plug that in. Okay. So let's talk about this zoning out while driving. Crying at movies. What does that have to do with hypnosis?
So a question that people often ask is, can anyone be hypnotized? Mm-hmm. So the answer is yes. Hypnosis is a natural state. Everyone goes into it. So a good way to explain how people get into it, if you ever are watching a movie, it's like, well, how come I'm crying at this movie? I know it's not real. Well, because if you're watching it, you're so immersed in it. It's like you're part of it. And if something happens, someone scares someone in the movie, you jump because your mind is being receptive to everything that's actually happening.
Oh.
When you're driving, if you zone out.
So film is a like watching film would be a form of hypnosis.
Yeah, because so to break down what hypnosis really is, hypnosis is a concentrated state of mind. So if you're watching a movie and you're very immersed and concentrated.
That's how
in
I
it,
am. When I'm watching a movie, I'm like...
Yeah.
You ever like the movie you just watched kind of becomes your personality for a second and you have to grieve the fact that the movie's over.
Yeah. So you're so immersed in it.
Like Googling the ending and the meaning.
What else has that actor been in?
Yeah, right.
I thought that was just me actually.
Yeah.
No. You're at the right table, dog. Right?
Yeah.
So we should call this like most hypnosis media.
Sure.
Well, a film is a form of hypnosis, right?
I don't want to say film. It depends on your receptivity. Because if you're watching a film and let's say let's say you're with your wife and it's a chick flick and you're like, I don't care at all about this movie. And she's over there bawling because of the movie, but you're like, this movie's right. trash. You're yeah. not receptive to it.
Okay.
You're not interested in it. So okay. you're not concentrating on it. Yeah. You may be over in the corner like checking social media or something.
Right.
But if she's giving all of her attention to it, then so
it's not necessarily like the object that it's like you said, it's not the clock. It's not mm-hmm. the film. It's the person immersing themselves in the world. The willingness. Okay.
Yeah. So even when it goes to like the driving, if you're driving and let's say it's a similar commute and route over and over again, it's so much mental patterns that your mind knows it. So it's to the point where you may be so lost in thought that it's like, well, if you're lost in thought, like who's driving the car? Like this is it's kind of scary. Yeah. And sometimes you may get to your destination and you're like, you're about to get out of the car. Like, how did I even get here?
Right.
I don't remember the cars in front of me when I got off. Well, what was driving the car then? Well, it was your unconscious mind was doing all that work for you.
Mm.
And a good example I gave someone earlier today, it's like, are you being aware of every single thing that's happening with your respiration right now? Probably gonna be like, no. Well, right. just imagine if you were to sit here and just become mindful of your respiration. You wouldn't, your whole life would be that. So our unconscious mind does that for us.
Right.
If you were to get a cut on your skin, you're not looking at it and saying, okay, I want X amount of cells to go to that cut and I want to have it stop bleeding. You're not doing that.
Right.
You're letting your unconscious mind do it for you.
Mm.
You're not digesting food thinking about it. It's all right. doing it for you.
Yeah.
But going to like the zoning out
yeah.
scenario, I think a buzzword that gets thrown around a lot improperly is dissociating.
Mm-hmm.
So can you explain the difference between zoning out and dissociating?
So dissociating is when you're disconnected from your body. And so, and I would use the word dissociating when it comes more so when someone's speaking about a trauma per se. And what would happen to an individual is they experience a trauma and their body doesn't feel safe. And because it doesn't feel safe, they live in their head. So you could say zone out could be some form of that. It's some form of it.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, zoning out is not a ongoing thing. If someone's zoned out on an ongoing basis, I would say from a clinical term, like I can't make, like, what do we call it?
Diagnosis
on it. Yeah. But that would probably be dissociation. Mm-hmm. Where someone's doing it on an ongoing basis. But if someone's doing it and they're driving, it could be they're just really deep in thought on, man, like you're going to a party. You're like, man, I got a party next week. I'm trying to figure out what to get, this, and go to Amazon and put this in my shopping cart. Oh, I got to use Prime. And then, hold on, how'd I get it?
So zoning out is really more likely going to happen when you're engaging in like a pattern, like driving on a familiar road or doing like washing the dishes, doing like something monotonous, repetitive that you're used to doing.
It's repetitive. So it's very meditative at the same time as well.
That might explain why like I've heard like a high percentage of car accidents happen within 5 miles of your home.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Because you're in a zoned out state. So you're predicting a pattern that for the most part is a traffic pattern of society moving around. And then, but then somebody breaks the pattern and pulls out in front of you and you're in that zoned out state. So you don't reflect as quick.
See, I always tense when I'm turning into my neighborhood because like no one slows down enough to let me turn. And so I'm always like, I'm going to get hit. I'm going to get hit.
I look at it differently. I look at it as most accidents happen probably 5 miles from home. Because most people aren't thinking that an accident is going to be happening so close to home.
Wow.
I've had 2 car accidents and both were probably no less than 2 miles from my house.
Mm-hmm.
In opposite direction, on the same road too.
Yeah.
Same road. Because during those accidents, I wasn't focusing.
Yeah.
One accident, I was like a kid. I was looking in the mirror. One, I was just like, just kept driving. So... Yeah. And once again, there's so many reasons it could be.
Yeah. Yeah. So Subconscious reprogramming of trauma, beliefs, and emotional loops. Understanding hypnosis. So what real hypnotherapy does is it's the subconscious reprogramming of trauma, beliefs, and emotional loops.
Yep.
Not fixating on the party that you're going to while driving home.
Well, I think like there's like a form of trauma therapy that's called, David does it. It's called, it's not EMDR, brain spotting.
Mm-hmm.
And brain spotting is a non, it's like a non-story. Like in EMDR, there's a linear story that you're telling associated with the trauma, right? So you're accessing that analytical brain and the memory and that kind of stuff. And then in brain spotting, you're not really, you don't always aren't telling the story of what happened, right? And it's some thing. And so there's been, and it's kind of a newer form of trauma therapy, but a lot of people prefer that experience because they don't have to relive the narrative level of what happened to them, right? So mm-hmm. it's able to happen at a subconscious level, and it's all eye movements, to your point about looking up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to give us some handles of what this reprogramming subconscious. Yeah.
So with hypnosis, you don't need to share any story because your story is a past state and probably most likely a present state.
Yeah.
So I don't care about that stuff. Not saying that I'm not validating what happened.
Right.
It's, do you want to just talk about all these problems? Or do you just want to tell me where you want to go? Because if you want to tell me where you want to go, let's go there.
Yeah.
Because hypnosis is future oriented. It's future focused.
Yeah.
So by me focusing on that, and I know that meant a lot to you right there because I saw that. So if you're focused on the future, what's the point of bringing up the past?
Right.
What's the point of it? Past already happened.
Yeah.
What is there to deal with in the past? Mm-hm. Because what happens is people
every start, counselor is cringing right now.
Yeah, I know. And that's one thing I tell people, like even on my social media, I tell people like, hey, listen, I'm not against therapy. Like go to therapy.
Yeah.
However, if it's not working, then do hypnosis.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing is you're using thoughts, which for many people, the number one addiction in the world is thinking.
Yeah.
That's the number one addiction. So people are using number one addiction to try to solve a problem.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not working. Well, duh, right. It's not working because it's not you releasing thoughts from the past. It's the most important thing, which every single problem originates to this one thing. It's your emotions in the past.
Mm.
You're not going to use thoughts to resolve emotions. Mm. What happens when I work with clients is we get to their desired state, outcome state, and they're like, I feel good. And a day later, like, oh my God, what is this feeling? Like, I don't know. And they're like, I don't know what's going on. And I'm like, I know what's going on. You told your unconscious mind, hey, I'm ready. Once you say you're ready, it's like, all right, grab the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get rid of it.
Yeah.
And once that happens, what attachment do they have to the past? Because the only attachment they have to the past is the emotion.
Yeah.
That's it. Once you resolve the emotion, what's left?
Yeah.
Wow. Because you can change your thoughts at any moment.
Right.
You can sit down and tell yourself, I am happy, I'm healthy, I'm cured over and over and over again. And yeah, you are. But that emotion is still there.
Yeah.
So what happens is people are like, I'm telling myself I'm happy, but I still feel angry. Mm. I know. Because you're trying to use your thoughts to get rid of an emotion. It doesn't work that way. Mm. The only way to get rid of an emotion is to get your body to be safe, not relaxed, safe enough to release. Mm. Because if your body's not feeling safe, then what's the point of releasing it? And I shared this story with a client recently. I said, just imagine you're in your house, you look outside your window, and there's chaos outside. Like, it's chaos. Like, are you going to go outside? He's like, no, of course I'm not going to go outside. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I wouldn't either. But just imagine you look outside the window and you see people outside having a great time and smiles, like, how likely you're going to go outside? He's like, man, I'm going to get my kids. We're all going to go outside.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. In order to go outside, what are you going to do? Go out that front door. Yeah. You're going to open the door. Mm. What is that door in that metaphor? Your unconscious mind opening it to receive. Mm. But if you know there's chaos in the world, your mind doesn't feel safe, it's not going to open the door.
Yeah. Huh. It's fascinating.
It is.
Yeah. I think, like, the thing that's resonating, like, for me personally, is, like, I've like, felt like, and this just might be from my own work, but it's kind of, like, less attached to the story of things, right? Like, even if I'm sitting with someone, but even so, my own story, right? Because sometimes it's, like, the story of my past and the retelling of the story of my past reinforces the emotions of it, right? And I think it's different from like being able to look at a situation like an uncomfortable emotional state, right? And say, okay, I can tell like that was like a disproportionate emotional response to the situation, right? Mm. And I probably can understand at some level that's probably because I grew up with an alcoholic father and a verbally abusive home, and it was never safe. And so there's things that happen today which are not related to that, but will bring that emotional state back, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, how many times can I tell myself that story of like I grew up like that, when it's like, at some level, it's like, fucking just change it. Like, mm-hmm. just, like, it's almost like I feel like this sense of like, I have the ability to fucking change it. Mm-hmm. So just change it. And sometimes it's like, you just, like, we say, like, do the next right thing. Like, I'll take action. So it's like, I'll clean, I'll do something, I'll make music. Like, that's a very, I just kind of like, it's not disassociating, but it's like, I'm moving on regardless of how I feel, because the feeling and the story behind the feeling is not, and reliving it and kind of rehashing it is not fucking helping anymore.
Yeah.
So why do I keep wanting to, you know, you understand? Like, so when you're saying this stuff, that's kind of what brings up for me is like, at some level, it's not rocket surgery, right? Like, you just kind of make a decision and be like, why do I keep returning to this state? It's uncomfortable. I don't like the way I feel. And why do I keep returning to it?
I would say it's because you might have not identified where you want to go.
The beach.
Yeah. You don't like rehashing it.
Yeah.
So then what do you want instead?
Yeah, right.
Mm. Tell your mind. If you keep reliving and hashing it out.
Yeah.
Where's your mind?
The mind needs something to do.
Yeah. So
give it something to do, which is vision the future.
So, yeah. So that's the easy thing that anyone can do.
Yeah.
It's, okay, what do I want instead? I call that the golden question. Like, what do I want? Because what happens is in some therapeutic settings, people sit down, they'll word vomit all what's going on in their life. And it happens to me sometimes. Some clients will hire me and they'll sit down, like, drawing. And it's like 10 minutes go by. I'm like, okay, so what do you want? And then, that's all I had to say, and they're already in a trance. Mm. And the reason why is because they've been so boxed into the problem, mm-hmm. they've never identified what is it they want instead.
Or even known that they could want it. Mm-hmm. That they could want something, right? Like,
yeah.
I know, like, that was even just the fact that I could want something that wasn't bad for me, right? Like, being someone in recovery, historically, all the things I want are bad for me and my family and society. Yeah. So it's like, for me, it's like, there's such a process of that, like, going, oh, I could want something good, beautiful for myself. And I think a lot of people get trapped in, like, they don't, it's like a fundamental self-hatred almost. Like, I don't want, they don't even think that they can want something good for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So then it turns in, it's a case by case basis of people. It could be something as, I want something good.
Yeah.
And once they get there, ooh, I got it. I want this now.
Yeah.
now I want this.
Yeah.
So it could be baby steps. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I've had people tell me, like, Daron, I don't know what I want. Well, if you don't know what you want, I don't want to assume, but maybe this whole session should be about you uncovering what you want.
Yeah.
And that could be the the awesome. Icing on the cake from.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, so I think that let's do this clearing out the myths, and then we're going to have I'm Alive number 5 come on. Can hypnosis make someone reveal secrets?
If they want to reveal secrets, yes.
Okay. I hope you're listening. Okay. Is hypnosis permanent?
If an individual wants it to be, yes.
Does she get a magic word? That's her question.
In what way? A magic word for what?
You know, like, there's always the movies, and they'll be like, hear a sound, and they snap out of hypnosis. Is that a thing?
Yeah. So
she's asking if there is, because she's off mic, but she's asking if there is a keyword or a sound that will snap her out of the hypnosis.
Oh, yeah. Let me say this, too. Let's say we were in a session, and she's in hypnosis, and I just walk away. She's not going to be stuck in hypnosis. She'll eventually just come out of it. Mm-hmm. So if that's what you're asking, like, you'll never be stuck in hypnosis. Like, you eventually have to get up and do something else.
Which ones do?
But I'll pull you out of it when we're done.
Oh, is there? Well, I don't think there's any more batteries. We'll switch battery. Sorry, we haven't technician.
Oh, you're good.
All right, so let's swap. We're gonna have Bailey come up here. Me and Sarah are gonna exit, mm-hmm. and we'll let you guys do the thing.
Wonderful.
Hi.
Hello, hello. Oh, ready?
I'm ready.
Great.
Let's do this.
All right. So for this, what is it that you want as an outcome?
No more vaping.
Okay. So if you don't want to vape, then what do you want?
I don't want to be, like, nicotine dependent. I think it's just like a anxiety thing more than actual nicotine, but I just want to get it out of my life. Am I too far?
Yeah.
Okay. I went through cancer last year, which people who are watching probably know. And so I'm trying to be healthier.
Healthier?
Healthier, yeah.
Okay.
And that's not healthy.
It's not healthy. So mm-hmm. if you're not vaping, you're healthier.
In a sense, it's probably better for my lungs.
Yeah, better for your lungs.
Or my body in general.
Yeah. I bet when you're healthy, you're going to be smiling like you just did. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to give myself the best chance at not having a reoccurrence or, like, any type of future problems. So I feel like there's steps I need to take for that to happen.
Okay. Steps you need to take.
Mm-hmm.
Not to have cancer again.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just imagine. I wonder, what would it be like to not have cancer again?
That would be amazing.
Amazing.
Because I'm 25. So to already have gone through that and knowing that I have the possibility of it happening again is terrifying.
Yeah. And if it never happens again because you're healthy, how would that make you feel?
I feel like it would relieve a lot of anxiety and stress. And mm-hmm. I kind of obsess over it on a day-to-day because I have really bad anxiety. Mm-hmm. So it's something that it never leaves my head. It's a constant thought. And most people are like, oh, well, just don't think about it. Or it's going to be okay. And that's not always easy.
Yeah. Seems like not thinking about it is actually thinking about it, isn't it?
Yeah. Definitely.
Because if you're not stressed or have anxiety, then what do you have?
That's so crazy. Christian has said that to me before.
I know.
Wow.
Do you notice what's happening?
Yeah. You keep saying things that are very relevant in my life, like, all day since I met you.
I know.
It's insane.
It is insane. how much you can feel better when the anxiety and stress is gone.
It's like a safety net.
It is. Because you're right. It is a safety net. And you want to get rid of something that's a safety net. There's a part of you that wants to get rid of it. However, there's a part of you that sees it as a safety net. So I wonder, as you just sit there, and just know that you're safe right now, right? Yeah. Because that's really important to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because the safer you feel, you might notice how relaxed you feel right now and how much easier that makes everything for you. And it's so simple. Very simple. That's right. Just take your time. Your mind knows what to do. And you know that it does. And what's happening right now, it's okay. Because your mind knows it's ready to just feel it all. Take your time. You're almost there. You're safe. There you go. That's it. Take your time. You felt that, didn't you?
What? That was really strange.
It was strange.
Whoa.
Yeah. I wonder what happened if you did that even more. All the things you could learn. Fascinating. That's it. Your mind knows it is too. So how come you keep nodding? Because if you do that more, you should receive all the answers. And it reminds me of something. It's this man. He go to a therapist. Tell a therapist all these things that are wrong with him. And he spent months and months with the therapist. And the therapist would say, sorry, I just can't help you. The man would get upset, find a new therapist. This would go on for years. One day, finds a new therapist and tells the therapist, I got all these things that are wrong with me and no one can help me out. I was hoping that you can help me out. And the therapist tells him, well, I actually had a client very similar to you. And he told me what he did. And I'm going to share it with you too. The therapist tells the man, there's a shaman all the way across the world. Definitely advise you to go there. But realize when you get there, it's about a 3-day hike to this cave at the top of this mountain where he lives. There's no other way to get to him but do this 3-day hike. The guy's like, okay, I'm going to do it. Books a flight all the way across the world. Different country, different culture. When he lands, he gets to this mountain, he's ready to hike. Real difficult hike. However, finally gets to the top after 3 days, three long days, that is. It's a little bit dark outside. Looks into the cave, and he sees a little flicker of light. So, starts to walk in the cave, and he sees the fire. That's right. And right by the fire is this man. He presumes it's the shaman. As he gets closer, the shaman looks at him, and he gestures over to the other side of the fire, welcoming him to sit. The man takes off all of his hiking gear and everything, puts it down. He sits on the opposite side of the fire, across from the shaman. And the shaman says, "What brings you here?" And the man tells him, "I have all these things that are wrong with me, and no one can help me. And I just have gone to therapist after therapist, and it seems like nothing really works. And I didn't want you to help me out." Shaman looks at him, says, "I can't help you." The man gets really upset, tells him, "So you're telling me I traveled all the way across the world, hiked for 3 days up this mountain, for you to tell me that you can't help me?" The shaman says, "Yes, I can't help you. And I can't help you because there's nothing wrong with you. You've always been perfect just the way you are. There you go. That's right. As you sit there, your eyes closed, just notice it all. Since you're here, it means it's time to let it go. That's it. That's it. You're safe. There you go. Just allow the body to relax even more because you're safe. Because this is your new safety net. You being here just proves that you're ready now. So let it all go. Being the healthiest that you can be, doing all the enjoyable things, and being so happy doing those things, at peace as well, and it's so freeing to know that you're perfect just the way you are. seems like it's making sense. And that's a good thing. Because as you relax more and you trust in safety, answers show up for you. And you can always do that. And that makes it easier for you to have the best life you can possibly have. I know. It feels good when you're not trying to figure it out, when you just allow. Not trying to figure out why you do this or that. You just put trust in yourself because you know already. And that makes life much easier. That's it. There you go. How do you feel?
Not heavy, like really light.
Light. You feel light. If you feel light, what's really important to know, you did that. If you can do it once, you can do it again. And the more you do it, the better you'll feel. I remember reading a book, and there's just one little quote inside the book, and I'll always remember what it said. It said, just be happy. And just like the smirk you had on your face, I had the same smirk when I read that. It was such a little quote. And yet, it said so much. I know. This feels much better, doesn't it? Good. So, just be curious. Is your unconscious mind done? Yeah. Good. Love the smiles. It's a good thing. Especially because you'll be doing so much more of that. Considering all the fun you're going to have. So we can do now, just look around and just notice what's all around. Yeah. Yeah. You may have forgot that they were in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was so weird.
Good job.
Oh my gosh. Y'all need to try this. Have you done this before? You need to do it.
They just did it. With you, I guess. Everyone that is watching and listening just did it.
Why don't you close out the show for us? With your light happy ass.
Oh my gosh, that was so crazy, guys. Okay, well, wow. I don't even feel like I can speak. All right, on this part. Oh, so. Where do you see hypnosis and healing headed in the next few years?
That's a really good question. I see it becoming more and more popular, mm-hmm. Which I'm really excited about because there are a lot of people that are struggling and suffering. And I know something like this could be the modality that they need. So, yeah, I see a lot more people move in this direction. I have a lot of people that reach out to me interested in being trained in this format. So, yeah, I see it definitely being on a upward trajectory.
Can I add a question?
Yeah.
Could you see it being added to different, like with other forms or solely on its own?
I've seen it added to other forms already. I would say if a individual practitioner knows what they're doing, there wouldn't be any need to.
Okay. All right.
Here's a question from someone. And so if you can just say this again. Ask what can we do prior to being hypnotized that would lead it to being a successful trance?
Okay, we have a question from the audience, and it is, what could we do prior to being hypnotized that would cause it to be more successful?
Nothing.
Nothing. So it's just...
Because what happens is people want to prepare for it, mm-hmm. but you can't prepare for what you don't know.
You just have to be willing.
You just have to show up. So sometimes people will ask me, like, what should I do before? Just show up.
Just be here.
I don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I don't. I know if there's one thing I know that's going to happen, is there's going to be an outcome. However... It's the first time I met you. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anything about you up until this point. So if an individual is trying to prepare for it, that's their analytical mind trying to be on guard. But even if they did, I'll get around that.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Where can they find
read them? That? Oh, okay. So you can find him at the website www.duronsing.com, on Instagram and TikTok at @Duron_Sing, YouTube at @Duron_Sing, and Facebook at @Duron.Sing. And we have a final thought here. Healing doesn't have to take years. The subconscious can transform fast.
Yes.
We're not going to thank everybody.
Do it.
Well, I would like to thank our audience, our guests, and our donors for everything. And yeah, we'll see you next week.
That was amazing. That was incredible.